Thank you. So, welcome to the March meeting of the IASB. I'll be chairing the meeting today because I have the benefit of a bigger screen. Well, we've got everybody joining, I think, for the first time remotely for this board meeting. And today we're going to talk about the final set of papers for the amendments to IFRS 17, paper series two. I think I'm handing over to Henry.
Thank you very much, Sue. Hello, everybody. Hope you can all hear me clearly. I would just like to say a few words just to kick off this afternoon. The purpose of today's meeting is obviously to complete our planned discussions of the exposure draft of the targeted amendments that we made to IFRS 17 and that we published last June. You'll recall that last month we completed our discussions of the technical topics that you decided last November to consider further in the light of the feedback received on the exposure draft. So that means today we need to consider the effective date of the amended IFRS 17 and the expiry date of the temporary exemption from applying IFRS 9. And this is covered in paper 2A, which Chalani will introduce very shortly. Following that, Jim will ask you to review the due process steps on the project, and that's in paper 2B. And if you are satisfied that all the steps have been completed, we'll ask for permission to start the balloting process so that we can continue to work towards issuing the amendments in the second quarter. So with those introductory comments, I'm now going to hand over to Chalani and paper 2A. So Chalani.
Thank you, Henry. Good afternoon, dear board members. Agenda paper 2A discusses the board's proposed amendments relating to the effective date of IFRS 17 and the extension of the fixed expiry date of the temporary exemption for some insurers from applying IFRS 9 in IFRS 4. I will first introduce the first section of the paper, starting at paragraph 6, which is about the effective date of IFRS 17. At the November 2019 meeting, the board noted almost all respondents to the exposure draft supported the proposal to defer the effective date of IFRS 17. The board therefore agreed the feedback provided support to confirm the proposal. However, there were mixed views about the length of the deferral. Therefore, in the paper, the staff have considered whether the board should confirm the proposal to defer the effective date of IFRS 17 by 1 year to 1st January 2022, or whether the board should extend the deferral beyond 1st January 2022. In the paper, starting at paragraph 12, we have highlighted the three main themes in the feedback on the exposure draft, which we have considered in coming to our recommendation. These are, firstly, the concerns expressed about any deferral of the effective date beyond 1st January 2022. Secondly, the view that more time is required for implementation. And thirdly, the view that it is important that insurers around the world initially apply IFRS 17 at the same time. In coming to our conclusions from paragraph 30, we have reiterated our view that the improvements introduced by IFRS 17 are urgently needed. We then considered whether insurers need more time to implement IFRS 17. We note that the board originally gave 3.5 years to implement the standard, and we think the effects of any disruption caused by subsequently making targeted amendments to the standard were adequately reflected in the proposed 1 year deferral. So we are not convinced insurers necessarily need more than a 1 year deferral, although we acknowledge implementation by 2022 would be challenging, particularly for smaller insurers. However, we can appreciate the concerns expressed about the need for insurers around the world to initially apply IFRS 17 at the same time. We think It is uncertain whether this would be the case if the board confirms a 2022 effective date because of potential delays and uncertainties surrounding endorsement mechanism in some jurisdictions. Therefore, on balance, despite the cost of further delaying IFRS 17, particularly for investors, the staff recommend the board defer the effective date of IFRS 17 by 2 years to annual reporting periods beginning on or after 1st January 2023. We think this additional deferral should allow sufficient time for an orderly introduction of the amended IFRS 17 into legal systems around the world and would enable more insurers around the world to initially apply IFRS 17 at the same time for the benefit of investors. The additional time would also ease the implementation challenges some are facing and help improve the quality of the initial application of IFRS 17. I will now pause for you to comment and ask any questions before we ask you question one below paragraph 36.
Okay, who'd like to comment? Nick. Can't hear you, Nick. Still can't hear you.
Too many mute switches. I think you can hear me now. So I have some reservations about the staff recommendation to extend the effective date by another year or defer by another year. As we know from the outreach we've done on the amendments, what's been reflected in the comment letters, both regulators and users have expressed concern about a further extension. But just to stand back for a moment and think about this from the perspective of the end customer, from the user of financial statements. Already as a board, we acknowledge that urgent action is needed. IFRS 17 has needed urgency. We acknowledge many inadequacies in the existing accounting practices. But as a user, based on the staff recommendation, it will be 7 years from the time that the standard first became adopted in May 2017 to when a user would see a set of results under IFRS 17, a full annual set of results. I see that some preparers express concerns that if the standards implemented at different times around the world, that may be difficult for users, but many users found accounting for insurance contracts perplexing today. So I'm not really a buyer of that. And above and beyond that, we know there are some really significant economic and social costs of financial reporting for these contracts, which really undermines comparability. Against that, I appreciate that some insurers, but not all, but some are still facing implementation challenges. And I'm also cognizant that there are some jurisdictions that will take longer than others to implement this into their legal framework. And clearly, there is some merit in having, you know, a smooth global implementation. So I think on balance, albeit reluctantly, I do support the staff recommendation, but I hope this now for the sector is a call on implementation and for endorsement more generally. And actually, let's get on with this now.
Okay, thank you. Who else would like to speak? Daryl?
Thanks, Sue. So I think I also support where the staff have landed with this particular paper, what the views are the recommendation that they've expressed. I think I'd probably like to come up with a slightly nuanced reason for why I get there. And although I support the primary, we'll call it the priority reason, which is the idea that all countries should be applying the standard, we'd like to see, give all countries the opportunity to be applying the standard at the same time. And I agree that for me was the strongest reason. I don't know if that in isolation would have been a strong enough reason for me to have supported the recommendation for the additional year. I think the other reasons that are set out, the challenges in developing systems and the challenge for smaller entities, and particularly the challenge that companies are experiencing with applying the amendments we've made, are also arguments that, again, all in their own right would have not been enough to persuade me to make the difference. But I think taken cumulatively, there's a lot of various reasons. I agree the strongest is everybody adopting at the same time. But I think cumulatively, all of those added up to convince me to support the staff recommendation.
Thank you. Cheng Wu, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, thank you. I agree with the STEP recommendation. It's a well-balanced conclusion in this complex and difficult situation in the world. Mm. But the one clarification on the some issues, we are going to finalize that there are a kind of requirement on comparative presentation, and also there is no change in early application. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Who else would like to speak? Francoise? Can't hear you, Francoise.
Still can't. Thank you. I also support the staff recommendation, but the argument which is playing a big role in that decision from me is the fact that there is evidence that smaller insurers do need more time to implement, and they have been suffering from lack of resources to progress further than they are at present. So that's the reason why I support. I think that there is enough time for endorsement processes, and as a result, that all countries could be in a position of having IFRS 17 implemented at the same time. So to me, I agree that it is important. I'm sensitive to the arguments regarding investors that Nick has developed. But if a number of entities have not had time to implement, that would be a major deficiency. So as a result, I support the staff recommendation.
Thank you. Rika and then Gary.
Okay. Thank you, Sue. I have a 2 point to raise. The first is a question to the staff, and another is my comment to the staff recommendation. First is, can I just confirm with the staff that any decisions we are going to make today will not affect any exemption for the first-time adopters of IFRS other than the deferral of the effective date proposed on this paper? And second point is considering all circumstances, current existing circumstances into one, providing 2 years deferral will give all stakeholders in the global market the reasonable time to get ready for applying the IFRS 17 properly at the same effective date. So I believe that this consistent application of the IFRS 17 at the same effective date will bring all stakeholders the best benefit of the metric. So I support the staff recommendation.
So thank you, Rika. Just picking up on your first question, so nothing in terms of the staff's recommendations in the paper change anything specifically for first-time adopters over what the current requirements and how that works.
Thank you, Henry.
Gary?
Yes. Hi, Sue. Thank you. Can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Okay. Like some of the other speakers, I have my own doubts about delaying this. Certainly some preparers were working long and hard to be done on time, perhaps the original date. And knowing from the past when trying to do a new standard and got delayed as a preparer, you tend to be annoyed if you're on track. But I think that's a price to pay, because I suspect more people need more time than there are people that are ahead of schedule. And I think just as the investors are going to have to deal with two different changes in accounting, both the standard plus IFRS 9, which we'll talk a little bit later on, is they're both very big changes, both very integrated, and considering how difficult it is to do a lot of these things, on balance, I support where the staff is. I don't think we have a great choice. I don't even think it's a very good choice, but I think it's realistically is practically the only choice to delay.
Thanks, Gary. Jing Chow and then Mary.
First of all, I agree with staff's proposal. I also understand Nick's points because users actually, or even some regulators, do need outcome of application of IFRS 17 to need more useful information. I also understand actually there's some concern from some insurance companies who have been prepared to implement IFRS 17 for many years, and they are more advanced than other insurance companies. So even if we defer 1 year further, actually it will add more cost or burden for those companies under this situation. But as Francois also mentioned, some small, medium-sized insurance companies, they may need more time to prepare. Even for some standard setters, maybe they needed more time to revise, to consult our amendment to IFRS 17, something like that. So I think I can see the benefit to have global, consistent, effective date of IFRS 17. I think that benefit is higher than the additional cost may be added to be some companies. And also it may allow more sufficient time for preparers. I think maybe it also can improve or ensure the quality of initial application of IFRS 17. So therefore, I agree with staff's proposal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mary? Then to Dal.
I'm going to go back to Nick's recap of the different considerations we have at this time, is I think that very much expressed my sentiments. And I'm just raising my hand because I think I fall just on the other side of the line that I think Nick just got over in terms of saying support it. To me, I think the staff has focused on the right thing, and for me it has come down to particularly the tension between the views of some users and all of the market regulators of not going beyond a year, and the, I think, very important consideration of adoption at the same time around the world. And I just want to say that the data that we have falls a little short of getting me across the line. As Gary said, I think that this is a situation in which there's no good answer. There's no right and wrong answer. We have a choice between two answers, each of which have the 1 year or the 2 year, each of which have some issues. And for me, the extra data that we have, the extra analysis doesn't quite get me over the line in terms of changing from what we exposed of a year's delay to a 2 year delay.
Thank you. To Dow and then Hans.
Thank you, Sue. First, thanks to the staff for preparing the papers. I do support the staff recommendation, and as many other board members reinforce some of the arguments that we have in the papers in relation to moving the effective date from 1st January 2022 to 2023. I think that considering the amendments that we are including in this proposal to be issued in June this year, it means actually that preparers would actually have 6 months from the transition date, especially in relation to the amendments. We know that the original one was issued many years ago, but in relation to the amendments, actually we have just 6 months from the transition date would be 1st January 2021, thinking about comparatives. This argument, together with the other arguments that the other board members also reached, and it is in the papers here, I think that 2023 is more reasonable date for the implementation of the standard. Thank you.
Thanks. Hans?
I support the staff's recommendation, not because I don't think that there is enough time, but really because I don't want those countries that have really worked expeditiously to get this done. I don't want, like Korea, like Canada, many other countries, China, I don't want them to suffer under the fact that Europe is very late, is still stuck in endorsement. And I wouldn't want them to be first exposed to the standard and then Europe coming in later. So that's my main reason. It's also with considerable chagrin. I've always said that I would like the standard to be effective before the next financial crisis. Well, the next financial crisis is there right now. Just look at the stock markets. And although perhaps the reason for the standard is not primarily financial, it is, of course, the coronavirus. The reason why the markets are reacting so with so much panic is that there are a lot of underlying financial issues, the enormous leverage in the global economy, the destructive effect of low interest rates on the financial sector, banks, and also insurers. In the current crisis, the interest rates are going even lower, further damaging insurers and banks. And you can see that they have been singled out by the financial markets with drops in value 40-50% in some cases. So I think it's really horrible, although, of course, the markets already perceive where the weaknesses are. They don't have a clear picture. They don't have a proper comparability. So the fact that the standard will be effective, well, perhaps the crisis will still be going on by then, but it is certainly not timely, and I find that incredibly annoying. You know, I think that the lateness in all these processes, people should bear the responsibility of that. I also think that we should take this opportunity. I received a letter from the Commission, the European Commission, asking us to work with some expedition on the review of IFRS 9, in particular the available for sale issue. I think we have to monitor very closely what is going on among insurance companies who currently mostly still use IAS 39 and available for sale, how they are now dealing with possible impairments of these equities. If these impairments are very little, if they are very late, then that will show once more how bankrupt IAS 39 was in this respect. So I think we should keep a very close eye on that. Also, the insurance industry is not applying IFRS 9 and the expected loss model. We have to also take a close look at how that is going in practice right now. I find it incredibly worrisome that this important sector is not only working with an outdated insurance standard, but also with outdated financial instruments standards. And we have to look very closely how that is going on in practice. But having said all this, with great chagrin, I will vote for the staff's recommendation.
Okay, is there anyone who hasn't spoken that wants to speak before we take the vote on question one? I can't see Tom at the moment, but with that, can we get a show of hands for who supports the staff's recommendation on question one to defer the effective date of IFRS 17 to 2023? Okay, Mary, you're not putting your hand up, correct?
Correct.
Anne, your hand isn't up? Oh, it is up, okay. And Tom, are you there? Okay, so I think nearly that's everybody in support except Mary, and Tom is absent.
Is absent, so yes, so 12 in support.
Okay, thank you. All right, so shall I hand back to Chalani?
Thank you, Sue. I will now introduce the second section of the paper, which is about the extension of the fixed expiry date of the optional temporary exemption for some insurance from applying IFRS 9. In the exposure draft, the board proposed extending this exemption by 1 year to continue to enable these insurers to initially apply IFRS 17 and IFRS 9 at the same time. Overall, respondents to the exposure draft supported the board's proposal. As the board has just decided to defer the effective date of IFRS 17 to 1st January 2023, the question arising is whether the board should also extend the temporary exemption from IFRS 9 by a further year to 1st January 2023. In analyzing this, the staff, starting at paragraph 43, have balanced the need for the improved information resulting from IFRS 9 against the benefit for insurers being able to initially apply IFRS 17 and IFRS 9 at the same time. In that regard, we first note that any further extension to the temporary exemption would delay some insurers providing the improved information resulting from IFRS 9, particularly in relation to credit risk, which is especially important in the current environment. We also note that the feedback on the exposure draft highlights that some entities have already applied IFRS 9 and that IFRS 17 has requirements that will assist entities applying IFRS 9 before IFRS 17. Nonetheless, we acknowledge that if the board does not make a corresponding further 1 year extension to the temporary exemption, preparers and investors will experience two sets of major accounting changes in a short period of time. Some insurers think it is essential to maintain the alignment of the initial application of IFRS 17 and IFRS 9. In concluding, in paragraph 56, we note the board has previously agreed on two occasions that the benefits in providing relief to specified insurers from the costs of the overlay approach in IFRS 4 outweigh the disadvantages of delaying IFRS 9. Given this, the staff think that the benefit of extending the relief by a further year to maintain the alignment of the initial application of IFRS 17 and IFRS 9 by these insurers could outweigh the disadvantages of a further delay to them implementing IFRS 9. Therefore, on balance, the staff recommend the board extend the fixed expiry date of the temporary exemption from applying IFRS 9 in IFRS 4 to annual reporting periods beginning on or after 1st January 2023. I will now pause for you to comment and ask any questions before we ask you question 2 below paragraph 57.
Thanks, Chalani. Who wants to speak about my favourite IFRS, IFRS 9? Daryl?
It might be my second favourite standard. So I think, and staff have heard me say this before, that I have some buyer's remorse around the original decision we made to delay IFRS 9. And if I consider that they're sort of, were three arguments we used, and I think Chalani, you covered those. On the one side, it's a good standard. We need to get the standard in. A lot of the reasons why, or a lot of the drivers for this standard, are still there, and as Hans mentioned, may have become more relevant over the last couple of weeks. So IFRS 9 is a standard that should have been out there as soon as we needed it. At the same time, on the other side, I did and still agree that there is some benefit to having IFRS 9 and IFRS 17 operate at the same time and come into play at the same time. And so I had those two balancing arguments in my mind. And then the third argument, and the argument which made a difference for me at the time when we made the first decision, was the fact that there would have been two major changes for this industry in a very short period of time. In hindsight, looking back, it's not a short period of time anymore. And I think we probably would have concluded, if we had known then what we know now, I would have probably been more in favor of saying adopt IFRS. Let's go with IFRS 9, let's get it in, and IFRS 17 can change, and there's a big enough gap between the two periods. That said, We don't like hindsight in IFRS standards, and with good reason. And I guess the situation that we're in at the moment is to say that if we were to leave IFRS 9 unchanged and change IFRS 17, we would have two changes in a very short time for the industry. And so in the end, considering all of that, I fall to the position of saying that the same arguments that I voted for this in the past are still relevant to the point in time now. And consequently, I would support the staff's recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Tadao? Then Anne, and then Jing Chao.
Thank you, Sue. I do support the staff proposal. I acknowledge the disadvantages of delaying the application of IFRS 9. But at the same time, as highlighted in paragraph 52, we could add some disclosures, but it would not be feasible for the board to enhance disclosure requirements in IFRS 4. What I do agree with that, but we might just remind that the stakeholders in general, preparers, users, that IS 8 requires disclosure about new standards issued, not yet effective. And then I think that in balance, it's supposed that the delay could be in a certain way, considering all stakeholders working together, having enough disclosures to deal with this disadvantage. But indeed, I think that in the balance, delaying the application of IFRS 9 to be implemented together with IFRS 17 is the better way. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anne?
Thanks, Sue. I'm comfortable about a further delay on IFRS 9. I think there's a big difference between IFRS 9 and IAS 39. And Hans has already spoken today about some of the concerns that are shared by himself and other board members. However, we're confronted with a situation where we really have to think about the practical implication of not delaying 9, but allowing the delay on IFRS 17. So despite my concerns, I will be supporting the staff's recommendation just on practical grounds. I think it's a very unfortunate situation that we have now. But on practical grounds, I think that the delay is necessary. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. Jing Chao?
First of all, I agree with staff's proposal. It can give insurance companies to exempt, apply IFRS 9 and align the two effective dates. But I, as Anne also mentioned and Hans also mentioned that, I also can see the benefits of, applying IFRS 9 as early as possible. Although there's some concern that those insurance companies will experience two sets of major accounting changes in short period. But as I said before, if some insurance companies, they have been more advanced, well prepared to, apply IFRS 9, it's not necessary for them, to align two effective dates. They can go ahead to apply IFRS 9 first, and then apply IFRS 17 later. I think there's some alignment between asset side and liability side, but there's significant benefit there. So as I know, some companies actually do well prepare for applying IFRS 9. I think they can just go ahead to apply IFRS 9 earlier. As I said, I think this is just a temporary exemption, so it's optional. So those companies, if they are well prepared, they still can go ahead to apply IFRS 9 in order to provide more useful and transparent information to the users.
Rika?
Thank you, Sue. I think it's clear that IFRS 9 should be applied at the earliest day. However, I support the staff considering all stated by others as well as on the paper. And especially in the case the insurers have already stated they started their implementation projects to apply both two standards together at the same date, providing two different effective dates might trigger significant disruptions for those insurers in practice. And also in such a case, two major changes in 2 years will be very not helpful for all stakeholders of those insurers. So that's the reason I support the staff's recommendation.
And then Mary Martin.
And I? Okay, I also support the staff recommendation. And so my main reason is for that because I think we have just decided, okay, that we should defer the effective date for 17 to 23. And we have done that because we think, okay, especially some companies, smaller companies, need more time to implement 17. And we heard also that it is absolutely necessary for them and for practical reasons to align 9 and 17. And I would found it not logical if we now say, okay, 9, we have to implement already then in 22 and then 17 in 23, if we are concerned about especially smaller insurance companies. And I think the arguments are still valid, that it is easier, it is more practical if they can implement at the same time. And that's the reason why I also support the staff recommendation to also align that to 23. Thanks.
Thank you. Mary?
Again, as with my comment, I feel I'm a bit of a naysayer, but I'm concerned about deferring the requirement to apply IFRS 9 further. And that's because the implementation of IFRS 9 is significant, both from the benefits that there's particularly with respect to credit and impairment, and the significance of the implementation for preparers of financial statements. So from my perspective, I think especially given that people will have available an extra year with IFRS 17, I think a requirement to focus and get IFRS 9 behind, it doesn't have to be two significant changes in 2 years. And I think the markets, users of financial statements would benefit from having the IFRS 9 information. I do agree with the staff recommendation that if we that we not try to tinker or modify in any way the disclosure requirements at this time, although I think today is a reminder about disclosures of the effects of a standard that has been published but not implemented is a very timely one. I think if entities are concerned about the interaction between IFRS 9 and IFRS 17 and potential distortions, they do have available a permission but not a requirement to use the overlay approach. So for those reasons, I am not going to support the staff recommendation.
Thank you, Mary. Tom, I can't see you, but I think you're on audio. Do you have anything to say?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. Somehow I lost the... So I would have voted in favor on the first one, and I tried to, but I couldn't seem to be heard. Otherwise, I'm basically in agreement that the date should be the same.
Okay, thank you. With that, could I get a show of hands from the board on who supports question two, the staff recommendation to extend the temporary exemption for insurers to 2023? That's 12.
Yes, I have 12 as well.
Yep. I didn't speak, but you won't be surprised that I'm not supportive of that, not least because I reduced my life expectancy getting IFRS 9 written in the first place for an original effective date of 2013. So 10 years late's a bit late for me. Who do I hand back to for paper 2B?
Thank you, Sue. We're going to go now to Jin to take us to the due process paper. Okay. So over to Jin.
Okay, thank you, Henry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can
you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Agenda paper 2B sets out the due process steps that the board has taken in developing the amendment to IFRS 17 and seeks the board's permission process for the amendments to IFRS 17. To assist the board, the staff have also prepared agenda paper 2C. This paper provides background information on the amendments the board has tentatively decided to finalize. During the deliberations, the board confirmed the proposals in the exposure draft with some changes as set out in paragraph 15 of agenda paper 2B. However, the staff think the final amendments to IFRS 17 as a whole do not differ fundamentally from the amendments proposed in the exposure draft. Therefore, the staff recommend the board finalize the amendments to IFRS 17 without re-exposure. Turning now to due process, Appendix A to the paper sets out the due process steps taken in developing the amendments to IFRS 17 based on the requirements of the due process handbook. In view of the steps that were taken, the staff believe that the board has complied with all of the due process activities identified as being required in the due process handbook, and hence are able to finalize the amendments. I would like to draw your attention to the three questions listed on page 8 of agenda paper 2B that we'll ask you in a moment. But first, I will hand over to the board for discussion. Thank you.
Does anybody want to comment on this paper? I don't think so. So I think we can move to voting. So who's calling? Okay. So the first question, do you agree that we shouldn't re-expose the amendments to IFRS 17? Could I get a show of hands, please? Tom, is your hand up?
Yep.
So that's everybody. Thank you.
14.
Question two, does anybody intend to dissent on the amendments to IFRS 17? Not the case. And question three, do you give the staff permission to begin the balloting process? Martin, you nodded? Yep. Okay, that's everybody. Thank you very much. Okay, so Henry, I think that's everything you needed from us today from a decision-making perspective.
That's correct, Sue. Yes, thank you very much.
Okay,
and we will now proceed to balloting, yes.
Oh, good, exciting. well done. Well done to the staff for huge efforts getting everything done and keeping us to our timetable, which was a big ask. And before we close, just a little bit of an unusual setting, given that she's not in the room. But Chalani, this is, I think, your last board meeting with us, and so even though it's remote, wishing you a all the luck with your good luck with your next steps, and thanking you very much for all of your hard work on this really important project. So thank you.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you very much.
I call today's meeting to a close. Thank you very much.